The question was asked to try and understand a little bit better the difference between Rashi and Unklus and their commentaries and any commentary that's being published today. And we see that Rashi became widely accepted, so much so that it's published with the Chumash, a standard Chumash, as Rashi, as Unklus. And we don't find any other commentaries really being accepted that way, nor do we find any commentaries being published that way. So, before we address this question, I think we should address a different question, and then I think we'll have a clear answer to this question. Who was Rashi? Who was Unklus? Unklus was a gay. Unklus was a person whose uncle was a Roman emperor, and he didn't want him to become a gay. And when he decided to become a gay, he wanted to have him killed. And there's a whole long story which we'll, God willing, learn about how they tried to execute Unklus and what happened every time they tried to take him out. And what was ultimately his end, we will discuss, but that's not for tonight. Unklus was a great sage. Unklus was considered to have special Ruach HaKodesh, that God helped him in compiling what he wrote. And what he wrote is considered to be godly, considered to be something that really he transcribed, something which we had on tradition. The Targum Unklus was so valued by the rabbis that the rabbis instituted that every Jew, every week, is supposed to read through the parasha twice and read Unklus' translation once. There's a special rabbinic mitzvah, mitzvah d'rabbanon, to do shnayim mikra v'echa targum, to read the parasha twice and read once Unklus' translation. The rabbis instituted that. That's how much they valued that translation. The truth is that Unklus really transcribed something which we had on tradition. He did an excellent job, and it's attributed to him. But really, this is something which we had on tradition. It's recorded in Ezra, and it goes back to Moshe Rabbeinu. He was the one who took it upon himself to verify the tradition down to the T and write it down. And the translation of Unklus includes more than just a translation. It includes an expansion and an explanation. If you read the in-depth in Unklus, you see that he did more than that. An example of that is in our parasha. Every time the Torah discusses something physical about God, Unklus translates it and explains that it wasn't physical. It says that God went down. So every time Unklus explains that, he translates it that God revealed himself. Doesn't mean that he went down. There's no distance when it comes to God. Our parsha is an exception, as we discussed last night. Why Unklus does translate literally that God tells Yaakov he will go down to Egypt. We explained one of the answers is that Unklus is quoting what God said. It's a quote. And on a quote, God said, I will go down. So a translation of a quote is, I will go down, even in relation to God. When you're explaining what happened, when the Torah records a happening, so then the Torah says, God went down, so then Unklus explains, God revealed himself. He doesn't translate it literally. Our parsha, which is an exception, where it's a quote, God says, I will go down with you, Jacob, I will go with you, Yaakov. So then Unklus translates literally, what did God say? I will go down. But Unklus did an amazing job, and that's why our sages instituted that we have a special rabbinic mitzvah to learn the parasha every week with Unklus. There was a great diamond merchant named Yitzchak who was once called to sell a very precious diamond to a high official. And this high official sent his servants far and wide looking for a special diamond to honor one of his idols. And they came upon this diamond merchant named Yitzchak, and they saw that he had a diamond that was fitting for them. And so they told him, come with us, we want to show it, and we will purchase it from you. And as they were traveling by the sea, he discussed with them what exactly they wanted this diamond for, and he heard that it was going to be used for an idol. And so he said, come, I'll show you this diamond, it's so special. And he took it out, and as he was showing it to them, he made believe that because of the waves he slipped, and he threw it overboard, and the diamond was lost. And he lost a tremendous amount of money. And the reason was he didn't want this diamond to be used to honor their idols, that I'm not allowed to help in honoring an idol. And a heavenly voice came out and said, you forewent that special valuable diamond that you had, I'll give you a diamond that will shine for the Jewish people. And when this merchant Yitzchak came back home, Yitzchak was also a fine Talmid Chacham, when he came back home, his wife became pregnant, and one day she was traveling down a street in France, and a Gentile was riding his horse and buggy down a bridge, and it was a covered bridge, and there was no room for her to move to the side. And he said, great, a Jewish woman, pregnant Jewish woman, and he started beating the horses faster, faster. He wanted to run her over. And God made a miracle. And she leaned against the wall of the bridge, and the stones gave way, and there was a little enclave for her to step back into. And there's a tradition in France to this day where that place on the bridge is. To this day, there's a place they point to. They say that's where it was. And this woman was given this miracle. She had this child, and this child's name was Shlomo, otherwise known as Rashi, or Shlomo Yitzchaki, the Shlomo, the son of Yitzchak. And Rashi was a genius. And I'll give you an example of Rashi's genius. You read through Tanakh, so there's one pasuk where Rashi writes, he says, we have a Masorah, we have a tradition that enumerates all the pesukim in Tanakh in which all the Aleph Beis appear. And Rashi says, I don't know why this pasuk isn't mentioned there. So I guarantee you that Rashi didn't go pasuk by pasuk throughout Tanakh looking to see if this pasuk has all the Aleph Beis. Rashi saw, Rashi noticed the pasuk in Tanakh that has all the Aleph Beis, and it's not mentioned over there in that tradition. Can you imagine what kind of sight that is to read a pasuk and notice each pasuk if it has all the Aleph Beis in it? And to remember that this pasuk isn't quoted. Meaning that we have an Aleph Beis. We have 24 letters, right? Aleph Beis Gimel Daled. There are only a specific number of pesukim in Tanakh that all the Aleph Beis appear in them. And Rashi points out that there's one pasuk in Tanakh. As you read that pasuk, Rashi writes in his commentary on that pasuk, he says, I don't know why this pasuk isn't mentioned there. You know, by the way, didn't you notice this pasuk has all the Aleph Beis? No, I think almost everyone doesn't notice. But Rashi noticed. And there's a lot of genius in Rashi. Rashi's genius is, on the one hand, the simplicity. You could read Rashi to a 5-year-old and you see that Rashi added to the explanation, and he added Sims a simple explanation. When you learn more, you understand the depths of wisdom that Rashi put into his explanation. And when you start learning the Gemara and the opinions of our sages, you start seeing that Rashi in his commentary on Chumash was giving halachic ruling as well. Rashi's opinion in Chumash can be read to a 5-year-old, and the great sages, the Tosafists, quote from Rashi's opinion on Chumash in explaining the Gemara. They say, hey, how come Rashi in the Torah said this or that? How does that fit with this Gemara? Because it's the same genius that wrote it. And his clarity, his short words, he minimized. He explained everything with the minimal amount of words, so that if you understand nothing about the Gemara or about the Chumash, you read it, he explained to me what it says. And when you understand more, you suddenly understand, hey, wait a second, he was coming to give a halachic ruling. And when you understand even more, you see that he was discerning between two understandings in the Gemara. And when you understand even more, the Abar Banel quotes in one place in Tanakh, he says, Rashi Sar B'Torah. Rashi is a master in Torah. You know, you have in chess, you have masters. In judo, taekwondo, you have masters. So when it comes to Torah, the Abar Banel says, Rashi is a master in Torah. Rashi just quotes a Gemara. And it seems like, oh, he's quoting to explain the Gemara. Says that Abar Banel, take note. There are different opinions as to what exactly the lettering of that Gemara is, and Rashi, in quoting that Gemara, was discerning and giving halachic ruling as to how a marriage halachically takes place. Rashi just quoted a Gemara, it seems. Yes, but in his quoting the Gemara, he was ruling that this is the correct quote of that Gemara, and that applies to how we view marriage in halacha today. So, it's just a quote, right? If we just read the Rashi, it seems like he's just explaining the story of Pilegesh the giver. What's a Pilegesh? You understand a little deeper, you understand more. You reach the Abar Banel level, suddenly you realize, wow, Rashi gave me a whole lot more than that. That's the genius of Rashi. The rabbis ruled that one can fulfill this rabbinic mitzvah of Shnai Mikra Vecha Targum by reading the Torah twice and reading Rashi's commentary once. Understand? This is something that was instituted by the sages in the time of the Mishnah, of the Gemara. And the rabbi said, Rashi did such a good job that even though Rashi's commentary wasn't around, you could read his commentary and fulfill this rabbinic mitzvah. This shows us a little bit about how our sages valued Rashi. It's amazing that the Beis Yosef will never quote a Gemara without quoting Rashi. Seems like it was obvious to him that every time he quotes a Gemara, obviously you read Rashi, you can't read a Gemara without Rashi. So he quotes the Gemara, he automatically quotes Rashi. I could open the Gemara, I could see the Rashi, but the Beis Yosef said, no, it's obvious. And Rabbi Yosef Karo was writing the Shulchan Aruch, when he quotes his sources, he always quotes the Gemara with Rashi. Why? Because Rashi became a fundamental part of the Torah. The 10 years ago, when I was in Merkaz Arav, so I was once walking out of the bathroom, and the cleaning guy in Merkaz Arav stopped me and he said, "Want to hear something nice?" I said, "Okay." She said, "What's the first word in the Torah?" I said, "Bereishis." She said, "You know what Bereishis means?" I said, "I think so." She says, "I'll tell you what Bereishis means. The letters of Bereishis are Beis, Reish, Aleph, Shin, Yud, Tav. Take out the Aleph, and that stands for Ein. Take out the Tav, and that stands for Torah. Take out the Beis, and that stands for Bli. Ein, Torah, Bli. What's left? What letters are left? Rashi." That's what the guy told me.
Yeah.
I think it's understandable why Rashi and Unkelos got the place that they got, that they appear with the Chumash. Because they're on that level. We see that the rabbis instituted them. Every other commentary aspires to do the best job they can, but everyone's coming off of Rashi. Yosef, yes, on this point or something else? Yeah. Wait, before you say something? Before you say, with that introduction, I just want to tell you something. Yeah, okay. I'm listening. When we say Rebbe, Rabbi, so I'll just quote the question for our listeners. Being that what Rashi is doing the majority of time, at least on Tanakh, is quoting, so most of what he's doing is quoting. What am I making this whole big ruckus about? First of all, we mentioned that even in a quote, if you quote a girsa, what's the correct version of that quote, you could be saying a lot. But there's more to it than that. I'll give you an example. The Torah says that a Kohen, is allowed to eat from the Truma. The Truma is holy food that an Israelite takes off and he gives to the Kohen as a gift, and that has a level of holiness that only a Kohen could eat it. And it's not allowed to become defiled, it's not allowed to become tamei. Says the Torah that a Sachir, a person who is hired by him, is also allowed to eat. And and the Toshav, one who lives by him, is also allowed to eat from it. Fine, that's what it says in the Torah. Comes the Gemara in Kedushin and says, Sachir, Toshav, that's referring to two different types of servants, Jewish servants that he acquired. One that he acquires for 7 years, one that he acquires for till Yovel, or until, could be 49 years, 50 years, until the Yovel. So the Gemara says that the word Sachir teaches us the simpler one, meaning the first word the Torah tells us is that a Sachir is allowed to eat from it. So you say, well, obviously if he has a servant for 49 years, he's part of the family, he's allowed to eat from the Truma. The word Toshav, so that teaches me that the next servant who's there for 6 years, because that's a bigger chidush, right? That even someone who's only there for a short period of time, he may also eat from this holy food. Right? Still here, we're all together. Right? Yeah? You open up B'chumash with Rashi. What does Rashi tell us? Rashi tells us a kohen made from the food of the truma. And when the Torah tells us that a sachir, a person who's hired work, made from it, it means one who's bought for 6 years. The Gemara didn't say 6 years, the Gemara said 49 years. Toshav, the Gemara says, is someone who's bought for 6 years. Says Rashi, that's someone who's bought for 49 years. He made from the truma. Rashi's quoting the Gemara, but he's quoting it backwards. What's going on here? So you read the Rashi. If you don't remember the Gemara clearly, you say, yeah, that's what the Gemara says. If you open up a Gemara and you look it up, you see that Rashi seems to have quoted the Gemara backwards. So, if you're an immodest person, you take out a pen, you put a mark, and you say, there must be a misquote here. And you tell your grandchildren, look, guys, I knew what I was talking about. The Gemara says differently. So if you're a modest person, so you say, wait a second, Rashi knew the Gemara. So did Rashi have a different version of the Gemara? So you look up, you see if there are other versions of the Gemara. No, that's the correct quote. And then you look and you see that the commentators already asked this question. And they say that Rashi was teaching us an insight as to how we understand the Gemara. The Gemara, it's true. When the Gemara came and approached the pasuk, the Gemara said, the Torah teaches us a Kohen may eat the Truma. And a Kohen who has a servant, so the first thing the pasuk enumerates is a Sachir. So we'll say that's the servant who's there for 49 years, he's also allowed to eat from it. And the word Toshav, one who dwells with him, so that's the guy who's living for 6 years, because when you have to derive things from the Pesukim, you always begin with the lesser Chidush. You always say, what's the smallest thing that the Pesuk teaches me? Okay, so that's the first word teaches me the smallest thing. Now I get to the next word, that's supposed to teach me something else, so that'll teach me the next stage. I can't skip stages. Right? Logical. You have to build up. But now, after the Torah, after you've derived both laws, after you've derived that a servant was there for 6 years maybe, and the servant was there for 49 years made. You know both laws. You've derived them logically from the Pesukim. Look at the words of the Pesukim. The word says Sachir. That's hired hand. That seems to indicate someone who's there shorter. Even though that's the first word that's written in the Torah, when I have to derive logically, I'll apply that to the one who's there 49 years. But after I have both laws before me, and I read the Pasuk, so I have to be logical. When I'm deriving, so I have to go in logical sequence, and then I say the first word teaches me the more permanent slave, the second word teaches me the less permanent slave, right? But after I know both of these laws, I look back at the pasuk, I have to be logical and say, well, what do the words mean? The word sachir means a hired hand, that's someone who's less permanent. Toshav means someone who's living in your house, that's more permanent. So after I know these laws, after I've derived them, when I'm coming to explain the pasuk, what's logical in the explanation of the pasuk is that it's the other way around. When I'm deriving, so I have to go in the sequence of what's the lesser chidush. When I'm coming to explain, well, what does the pasuk mean? So then after the Gemara has taught me, deriving from the pasuk, that both of these are true, so then I have to use logic and say, well, which word means what? You with me? That's a small example. Rashi quoted the Gemara. It's true, he only quoted the Gemara. But he also taught us in quoting the Gemara that when the Gemara goes through its logical sequence, the Gemara sometimes doesn't tell us, well, now after you have my conclusion, how do you learn the Pesukim? That's a small example. Every Rashi has tremendous amount of depth. You could read it on the level of a 5-year-old who's just starting to learn Chumash. Hopefully every year you gain depth, and that's why I said it in that order. Meaning, I said initially you read it to understand Pshat in the Pesukim. The next level you gain wisdom and understanding in life, you understand there's more wisdom in Rashi. You might not yet know all of the Gemaras, but you'll notice that Rashi chooses which quotes he quotes in the Gemara. There are hundreds of Midrashim on any given pasuk. Rashi chooses which one he presents us. One of the things Rashi is teaching us is, as an educator, which Midrashim we should be teaching our 5-year-old children. You could learn that Akedah and tell your kid, yeah, you know Abraham? He was a kind man. He took his son. He bound him up. You know what the word Akedah means? Akedah means to tie his hands and feet together. And then he took out that knife and he held it by his neck, and this poor little kid, he's lying there all bound up. And then the angel showed up and said, Abraham, stop. You know, the Rashbam learns Pshat that way. The Rashbam, Rashi's grandson, does explain the story that way. He says, the simple understanding is, why did he have to bind Yitzchak? Because Yitzchak was a little boy. Well, you explain that to your 5-year-old son and you're doing a terrible thing. That's not the understanding he's supposed to have. He's supposed to have the understanding Rashi teaches us, that we have on tradition, the one medrash that Rashi chooses to present us with. that Yitzchak was 37 years old, and Yitzchak chose to go to that Kedah, as Rashi points out from the Pesukim. So it's not just a question of quoting Midrashim, but which Midrashim Rashi chooses to quote. And that, even if you don't have the background to know what's out there as far as Gemara and Midrashim, you could appreciate out of life's wisdom. As you grow, as you mature, you'll see more depth in Rashi. And the more you learn, the more you'll also understand how much Rashi is telling us as far as the Gemara goes and which Midrashim he rules like. It's right, it's part of it, but it's only part of it. Yeah. One second, I think it's only fair to let everyone have a chance. Give me one second. We'll take a we'll see how many are left and see how many people want. Yeah.
I'm understanding that slave of Cohen is more holy than the
I didn't follow that. Sorry.
How come the slave of the non-Jews Cohen can be a Truma, and the Israel cannot be a Truma?